Welcome. My name is Dr. Deepika Bhattacharya, Assistant Professor of Medicine at the University of California at Los Angeles. This is an IAS USA module on counseling patients with chronic hepatitis C virus infection. Today, I will be covering the following key points in the counseling of patients with chronic hepatitis C virus infection. 1. Over-the-counter and prescription medications. 2. Alcohol and cannabis use. 3. The importance of diet and modifying obesity. And 4. Complementary and alternative medicines. In this slide, we will go over different over-the-counter and prescription medications, including acetaminophen, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs, vitamin D, and iron supplementation. In this slide, we'll talk specifically about acetaminophen. As many of you may be aware, there is considerable concern regarding acetaminophen and liver toxicity. Acetaminophen overdose is the most common reason for fulminant hepatitis in the United States. And recently, there has been concern about the safety of acetaminophen, even at its maximal dosage of 4 grams per day in the general population. So when we talk about acetaminophen, we divide it into 2 groups. Those with hepatitis C disease, who have stable liver disease without cirrhosis, and those who have cirrhosis. So in those individuals with stable liver disease without cirrhosis, there aren't, unfortunately, a lot of studies to help guide us. There was one study that was done in the 80s that reviewed acetaminophen use in patients with stable liver disease without cirrhosis. These patients did not have hepatitis C. This was a double-blind, 2-period crossover study of 20 patients with chronic stable liver disease, 8 of whom had cirrhosis. And these patients tolerated acetaminophen given at a dose of 4 grams a day for 13 days without adverse events. However, based on limited data and possible adverse effects, and of course the concerns of fulminant hepatotoxicity, most experts would limit the use of acetaminophen to 2 grams per day in those with stable liver disease without cirrhosis. In those patients with cirrhosis, again, there have been no prospective long-term studies of acetaminophen use, and the half-life of acetaminophen in patients with cirrhosis is double that in healthy controls. So based on this data, other limited in vivo data and possible adverse effects, most experts would limit acetaminophen use to 1 gram per day in those individuals with cirrhosis. In the next slide, we're going to talk about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs. With regards to NSAIDs, idiosyncratic NSAID-induced hepatotoxicity has actually been well described. However, again, dividing patients into those with stable liver disease without cirrhosis and cirrhosis, in those patients with stable liver disease without cirrhosis, low-dose NSAID use may be tolerated in those with mild chronic liver disease. However, cirrhosis presents a different issue. The greater concern with NSAID use in cirrhotic patients with portal hypertension is actually associated with renal impairment, and in particular, hepatorenal syndrome. And this is thought to be due to the inhibition of prostaglandins, which leads to a decrease in renal perfusion, reduction in GFR, and marked sodium retention. Cirrhotic patients require these prostaglandins to counteract the renin, angiotensin, aldosterone, and sympathetic systems that reduce perfusion to the kidneys. So that's why when we think about NSAIDs and cirrhosis, the greatest concerns are of associated renal impairment and hepatorenal syndrome. Of course, not an insignificant concern is the concern of mucosal bleeding secondary to thrombocytopenia and coagulopathy of advanced liver disease, of which there is a greater risk in portal hypertension. So in general, in those with cirrhosis, we say that NSAIDs should be avoided in patients with cirrhosis. In this slide, we're going to talk about vitamin D supplementation. In the last 5 or 6 years, there has been a wealth of information on vitamin D and its role in all aspects of health, with regards to hepatitis C, vitamin D in vitro may improve interferon alpha signaling and may itself have antiviral effects, and vitamin D deficiency may contribute to liver fibrosis. In vivo, vitamin D deficiency increases the risk of bone disease, and advanced liver disease also increases the risk of bone fracture. With regards to treatment response, cohort analyses have demonstrated that low vitamin D levels are associated with non-response to interferon alpha-based therapy, and randomized trials of vitamin D supplementation in HCV genotype 1 patients treated with pegylated interferon alpha and ribavirin did show improved virologic responses, but these results require further confirmation, and the role of vitamin D supplementation in the era of interferon-sparing regimens is also not well known. However, given the association of vitamin D deficiency with an increased risk of bone disease and issues surrounding advanced liver disease and its increased risk of bone fracture, most experts would recommend vitamin D supplementation to maintain normal levels, i.e. to maintain 25 hydroxyvitamin D levels at or above 20 nanograms per milliliter, which may require 2 to 4,000 IUs per day of nutritional vitamin D. In the next slide, we are going to talk about another commonly discussed supplement, iron. The reason iron has come into question is because we know that excess iron accumulation may occur during chronic liver disease. In one study, up to 30% of those with hepatitis C or alcoholic cirrhosis demonstrated serum accumulation of iron. 10% of these individuals had liver tissue deposition. We also know that high hepatic iron concentrations can be detrimental. They can be a predictor of non-response to interferon therapy. And in rat studies, there is enhanced hepatotoxicity when both alcohol and iron were co-administered. So in light of this data, we recommend that excessive iron and chronic liver disease be avoided. Patients who want to use a multivitamin should choose a multivitamin without iron, unless there is an iron deficiency anemia that's been diagnosed. However, dietary iron is not harmful. In the next set of slides, we're going to talk about the effects of alcohol and cannabis. In the first slide, we'll talk about alcohol. As many of you know, alcohol use is associated with an increased risk of cirrhosis, hepatocellular carcinoma, and mortality when consumed greater than 48 grams a day. There have been, in addition, several studies looking at alcohol use in those with hepatitis C. And as expected, there is a synergistic effect of alcohol and hepatitis C. Heavy alcohol use, defined as greater than 50 grams a day or greater than 5 drinks a day, was associated with increased fibrosis in those with hepatitis C. And interestingly, both light and moderate use also have an effect, with the degree of fibrosis correlating to the degree of use. In one study, less than 31 grams per day exerted some effect on the probability of increased fibrosis, with 31 grams, 50 grams per day exerting a greater effect. So this allows us to counsel patients that, especially those with hepatitis C, that they should be avoiding alcohol because even light and moderate use may have an effect on the probability of developing fibrosis. So let's move to cannabis. There are biologic effects of cannabis. There are cannabinoid receptor types 1 and 2 on hepatocytes, and they regulate the progression of experimental liver fibrosis. And its use, cannabis use, has been associated with liver disease. Daily cannabis use itself is associated with a higher risk of moderate to severe liver fibrosis, and the combination of moderate to heavy alcohol use is associated with an even greater risk of fibrosis, again, in combination with cannabis. Cannabis use is also a predictor of steatosis. Most experts would recommend that cannabis or marijuana use be discouraged in those with chronic hepatitis C because of its association with liver fibrosis progression. In the next few slides, we'll talk about diet and modifying obesity. As many of you know, obesity carries a higher risk of advanced fibrosis in the setting of hepatitis C disease. Elevated body mass index is also a predictor of response to pegylated interferon alpha and ribavirin-based therapy, and insulin resistance, even without diabetes or obesity, is associated with treatment response in the same way that genotypes are associated with treatment response. insulin-sensitizing agents, including metformin or pioglitazone, have not improved HCV treatment outcomes in studies performed to date. So what can we do about modifying obesity? Well, weight loss, ideally 10% of body weight, and exercise may help. And interestingly, the use of newly available protease inhibitors, including tenofovir and bosepovir, may mitigate the effects of insulin resistance on response. In one tenofovir study, baseline insulin resistance did not impact virologic response. In the next few slides, we'll talk about complementary and alternative medicines. As many providers are aware, complementary and alternative medicines are very commonly used in our patients with hepatitis C. In one study, 42% of patients with chronic hepatitis C used at least one herbal product. Milk thistle extract was used by 72%, and other commonly included alternative medicines included S-adenosylmethionine or SAMe. And of course, as many of us know, some herbal extracts are associated with fulminant hepatitis, and so there is cause for concern, certainly, with the use of herbal extracts, but it's also unclear to what degree complementary and alternative medicines actually lend an effect to either treatment response or mitigation of liver disease progression. Let's talk first about milk thistle. So there has been animal model to suggest hepatoprotection during various liver insults, including alcoholism, with the use of milk thistle. But two trials, and one was a double-blind placebo-controlled study called the SYNC trial, conducted by the NIH, completed in 2012. The SYNC trial demonstrated there was no change in serum ALT or HCV RNA during 24 weeks of milk thistle administration during hepatitis C treatment. Additionally, the HALT-C study in 2008 did not show a difference in anti-HCV efficacy or ALT, but patients who did take milk thistle did report a somewhat better quality of life. S-adenosylmethionine is another commonly used alternative medication, otherwise known as SAMe. Again, there is some in vitro data to suggest that it may improve interferon alpha signaling, and supplementation with SAMe did improve early second phase HCV viral kinetics during treatment with a modest improvement in SVR. However, its role in interferon alpha sparing regimens is unclear. So, in summary, we've talked about four key issues in the counseling of patients with chronic hepatitis C virus infection, and they included over-the-counter and prescription medications, alcohol and cannabis, diet and modifying obesity, and complementary and alternative medicines. With regards to over-the-counter and prescription medications, acetaminophen should be limited to 2 grams daily in those with stable liver disease, and to 1 gram daily in cases of cirrhosis. NSAIDs should be avoided in cases of cirrhosis, and iron supplementation should be avoided unless iron deficiency anemia is present. With regards to alcohol and cannabis, patients should be advised to refrain from alcohol use and marijuana use, given their detrimental and synergistic effects on contributing to liver disease progression. With regards to diet and modifying obesity, obesity itself is associated with an increased risk of fibrosis as well as a poorer response to interferon-based therapies. Weight loss and exercise are recommended in this case as adjuncts to therapy. And then finally, with regards to complementary and alternative medicines, so far there is insufficient evidence to support their use.